This is the SB Live Washington podcast, a weekly conversation about high school sports, the people who play them across the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, statewide preps reporter with SB Live. And joining me is the host of the ISO podcast with Dan Dickow, SB Live's preeminent basketball mind. He's Dan Dickow, as well as SB Live senior reporter Todd Millis. He's your pal and mine. Gentlemen, how we doing?
I'm great. Looking forward to the topic that you've got on deck for today.
I was wondering if you're going to introduce me as your pal and mine. I thought for a minute there maybe you forgot that because I'm kind of getting tired of it. I'm nobody's pal, man. So let's get on with it.
Listen, that's my thing. I throw you for a little loop and bring it back around.
I know. You throw us a few crumbs in the intro and then we get into the juicy stuff. So I get it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would just expect a torrent of angry emails if I hadn't have said that. So, but I'm excited for this week's episode, guys. Coming up, I'm joined by Ross Jelseth. He was the founder of Tacoma's Life Christian Academy, a school that we cover and what we do. And he was a longtime high school and college football coach, as well as an administrator. He's the author now of the book Winning Words, which pulls from a lifetime of leadership to examine the influence and impact that your words carry in all forms of leadership. And that's a great jumping off point for us. You know, we talk to coaches all the time on this podcast. Dan, you have your own podcast, the ISO, where you talk to coaches at a very high level and leaders as well. It's a topic that's long intrigued me, especially as a high school sports reporter here in Washington. In my time as a journalist, and I'm sure you guys can relate, just talking to coaches, players, former players who hold on to the words their coaches tell them. And that's one of the great things about sports is how well it prepares us for life, its trials and tribulations. And I think everybody, if you think long and hard, can pull some sort of piece of advice that a coach once told them, even, you know, long after playing days. So that's what we're going to talk about here today. So I will then pose the question to you guys. What is one lasting message a coach told you that sticks with you to this day?
Well, I'll just jump in right away, Andy. Sorry to cut you off, Todd. I've had lots of experiences, positive and negative, with coaches. I was lucky enough that I had a tremendous high school coach in Eric York, who is a lifelong friend to this day. His sons are friends with my kids, and so it's been nice to see that relationship evolve. In college, I started off with a really negative coach in Bob Bender. It completely changed from the day I was recruited to the day I stepped on campus. And then transferring to Gonzaga was a breath of fresh air for Coach View. His belief in me and his never allowing me to be complacent was perfect for what I needed to allow me to get to the NBA, where obviously then it's a business. Your coaches aren't friends. Quite frankly, they're there to do their job as best they can to get the team to win, and all the players are expected to do their job. But when I look back at the coach that probably had the most impact and influence on myself, would have been my eighth grade basketball coach at Cornerstone Christian School in Vancouver, Washington, who was also the discipleship teacher at Cornerstone that year. Oddly enough, he was my Little League baseball assistant coach 2 years before. So I knew him. I knew there was something a little bit different about this coach in the way he encouraged and the way he really motivated kids to be their best and to do their best. But, you know, when you're 11 years old, you don't necessarily understand what it is. So when I get to eighth grade at Cornerstone Christian School, I'm a new kid at the school. I instantly recognize and know that, hey, he was my baseball coach from a couple of years ago. We form a connection and a bond over our both of our love of sports, and in particular for me, basketball. And he was somebody that taught me the values of life in being very faith-driven, something that has stayed with me to this day in the belief system that I hold dear as a Christian. But he also really motivated me and guided me to compete in absolutely everything that I did. And it was very evident that he lived his life in those same ways. He is someone that, you know, because of his faith and his beliefs, he has kind of been around the world as an athlete and as a coach. And he spent probably 25 of his last 30 years living in Jakarta, Indonesia, teaching and coaching and being an administrator at the largest Christian university in the country of Indonesia. And so he's somebody that had a huge, profound impact on my life since I was 13 years old. We don't talk more than once every 2 years or so, just because he lives over there. I live here in the States and busy lives. But when we get a chance to talk, even to this day, it's very profound for me simply because of the impact that he had on me at a young age. And people, a lot of times people will look back and say that I don't want to let this person down, or I want to live up to this person's expectations of me. And sometimes that's wrong, but sometimes that's very impactful. And I would say that the lessons that he taught, the way that he went about his life, I would hope that he is proud of the way that I live my life. And I hope that he would be proud of the way that I try to coach kids to this day when I'm in that setting, and hope that he would be proud of how I am around with my family.
Does he have a name?
Good point. Steve Metcalf. yeah, Steve Metcalf is his name. He played college baseball at Northwest Nazarene before being in the Vancouver area. So Steve Metcalf was a huge influence on my life.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting question. I can talk from sort of the ordinary kid person perspective. You know, at one point when I was growing up in third, fourth, fifth grade, I thought, it's oddly enough, we're very basketball friendly on this podcast and in this company. And at one point I thought I was going to be a basketball player. And my dad is ex-retired military, didn't play a whole lot of organized sports in Denver, but just kind of picked it up in the streets and coached my fourth grade team. We were a pretty good team through the boys club. And it wasn't a whole lot about an X's and O's. And the one thing that my dad would always say in the huddle and during practice, it was kind of a three-pronged thing. It was trust your teammates, embrace your teammates, love your teammates. And we did, even in fourth grade. I mean, we had so much fun on that team. We weren't the most talented, but we had a lot of fun. I was, kind of the primary ball handler. Sometimes it's difficult when you want to score or you see something that you can go get to remember you have teammates around, but it was something that he always preached and something I've always embraced. I mean, even today when I'll go out and play pickup basketball with my friends, I have kind of that mentality. Just remember you have teammates, trust them. And in my 20 whatever years as a sports writer, having been around a lot of a really good coaches, Dan, especially Tony Bennett in the times that he led, Washington State to back-to-back NCAA tournament appearances, been able to attend a lot of his practices, a lot of his messages were centered around what my dad told me, talking about embracing your teammates and trusting your teammates. And it's always been something that's stuck with me. That's why we call it a team sport. And I know you know that, Dan. I know you know that, Andy. So it was good to kind of get exposure to that at an early age.
Dan, I was trying to gab at you when I was on mute after your answer. And I love that, Todd. The fact that it goes all the way back to fourth grade and that those values were instilled at that young age. But isn't it amazing how you can go all these years, without talking to somebody regularly? Like, Dan, you mentioned with your coach. And yet when you see them, you feel like it just picks up right where it left off. I mean, that really has got to say something about that type of relationship.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. And I think a lot of it is based on, having a very similar belief system. A lot of it is based on the importance that both of us have placed on athletics in our lives and what they can teach you. And it's a lot of it's based on, I guess you could call it mutual respect after I've grown up, you know, because he was somebody that when I was in college, you know, our conversations changed a little bit. When I was in the NBA, our conversations changed a little bit. And yes, it's been a number of years since we've talked, as I've mentioned, but, you know, the best coaches, regardless of if the student athlete or the person that they're mentoring is in fourth grade, as Todd mentioned, or eighth grade when I really kind of was poured into by this coach, or now the fact I'm dating myself, but I'm 42 years old, you know, the best coaches continue to teach regardless of their student's age or regardless of their player's age. They just learn how to tailor the message to make it important to that person's being place and time. And so that's one thing that I've always felt the greatest coaches do.
No question. And that is, you know, something that applies to the coach who I consider the most influential coach I've had. He coached me as a club soccer coach in middle school and through high school. His name's Max Elfin. It was in the Portland area. It must have been late middle school that this was told to me. You know, I was never the biggest, the fastest, or had the best footwork or anything. But I had a conversation with him that centered around, you know, how I was going to take the next step as a player, as a teammate, and position myself to one day, you know, snag a varsity roster spot at a really competitive high school. And something he told me always stuck with me. And I was recently, when we came up with this idea to talk about this on the podcast, I reached out to my parents and said, like, what was it that Max told me? Because, you know, the gist of it stuck with me, but I think they remembered it a little bit better because, you know, it was so resonant. But he essentially said, you know, performance progress had to come from within. I played club soccer, had supportive parents and a great foundation and people in my life who cared for me, but that real growth wasn't going to come from another team. It wasn't going to come from another experience, another coach. It was going to come from me. And looking back, you know, that was maybe the best advice I ever got. And it's applicable at any stage of life. Is to, you know, first, before pointing the finger outwards, is you know, look inwards and say, all right, what's, you know, how are we really going to assess what needs to happen to take a step forward? And so I actually ran into Max before COVID the first time in, I want to say, almost 10 years at a restaurant. And it was great seeing him. I'm sure, you know, he had no idea that something he had said stuck with me for all these years, but that's just, you know, that's the nature of coaching. And it was cool to see him go, oh my gosh, Max, he's got, yeah, I think he must have been in his, now that I think of it, probably in his late 20s, early 30s, coaching us. And, you know, seeing him with a kid and married, another kid on the way, it was just, yeah, refreshing. I remember calling a friend who I still keep in touch with, Cooper, and saying, who played on that team, and just saying, hey, I ran into Max all these years later. And just him going, yeah, that's pretty cool. And we can both pull kind of similar memories from that experience. So I'm glad that we talked about this today, and I'm even more excited to talk about the guy that we have coming on next. Again, like I said, his name is Ross Jelseth. He's the author of the book Winning Words, and we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, I'm going to sit down with him and hear all about his book. So you guys, Dan, Todd, thank you for being with me today. Always appreciate sitting down with you guys and hearing your guys' stories of the coaches and leaders that impacted you both.
This podcast is brought to you by Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking with drive-up ATMs. Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of Scorebook Live. They care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the entire state of Washington. Head to WFDBank.com to learn how they can help you meet your financial goals. That's WAFDBank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. We hope everybody's staying safe and healthy. We're just as excited for high school sports to return as you are.
Welcome back to the SB Live Washington podcast. In the last segment, you heard Dan Dickow, Todd Millis, and I talk about messages, advice, and words that coaches told us at one point that stuck with us for the long run. We did that in part because it's a great exercise and everybody has a story like that. But more so, we did that to set up this next conversation that we're going to have. The author of the book Winning Words joins us. His name is Ross Gelsith. Did I get that right, Ross?
Perfect. Well done.
Ross, thank you for joining us. How are you today?
I'm great. And thanks a lot for the opportunity. I'm excited to follow up your previous conversation with Todd and Dan.
Likewise. So in the last segment, you know, we didn't know what each of us were going to say. We kind of came into it with the idea of, okay, everybody come prepared to share one thing a coach told you at some point that stuck with you. And what we found is that all three of us picked something. Our most memorable piece of coaching advice came from middle school or before. And that includes Dan Dickow, who went on to play at a really high level at the in college in the NBA for a lot of great coaches. And it was his eighth grade baseball coach that stood out to him. You made an effort to include in your book quotes from coaches at every level. But how important and how striking to you is it the role of a coach, especially kind of at a time of younger adolescence, and how impactful words can be at that age?
Well, if you think about this from the perspective of a parent, when you sign your child up for a youth league sport activity, whether it's swimming lessons or it's youth baseball or the Saturday morning basketball program, what does a parent look for? Well, a parent ultimately looking for the best possible experience, true? And as a result, part of what they're evaluating and wanting for their child beyond success, even at the age of 9 or 10, they want a positive experience. Well, a positive experience is desired because people want to see their son or daughter continue to experience all of what athletics or the arts or any type of hobby-related activity, and how that experience can help build the kickabout, the most significant way by which information is passed from a coach to a young athlete, a middle-aged athlete, an older athlete. It's the power of words, but it's also the delivery of the words, how the words are spoken, the tone, the affirmation or the defamation. So I think in that regard, I remember experiences in youth league baseball when I was 9 years old. And I remember the coaches that I had at that time. And I must have had a very positive experience because I spent from the time that I was 9 until I was 61 being in athletics every year.
Wow.
So for me, my coaches affirmed why I love athletics, why I love my coaches, why I hung on every word. And I think the vast majority of people are looking for the same thing. Affirmation, encouragement, you can do it, keep on keeping on. Yes, let's do it together.
No question. And one of the things you talk about in the writing of this book and in sort of the thesis behind it is the power of positive messaging.
Yes.
One of the things that stands out about that premise is that, you know, leadership doesn't just come from an educational setting. It can come from a household setting, in a religious setting, a sports setting. And leadership can come from anywhere and anybody. How much of this
book
did you hope would empower somebody who maybe didn't previously view themselves as a leader or understand and think about their words in that way?
When I started to create the framework ideologically for the book as to what it would consist of, I did not have a defined audience. I had the perspective that this book could help a vast majority of people. You identified, Andy, you know, some of the people that we look at who pours into one another and leaders. Well, there's no more significant leader than a mother or father in their home. There's no more significant leader than an older sibling speaking to the younger brother or sister. The same is true with a teacher, for example, in a classroom setting, who's speaking into a second grader, a high school coach speaking into a 10th grader as compared to a 12th grader, a college coach, a leader in a business place. Let me just pause there. Leaders have choices every day. They're busy. But for example, you and I walk by in a typical workplace setting, several people per day. We meet them in hallways, we go to their workstations, or they come to my office when I was the head of a school for 26 years. But the point is, every one of those appointments is an opportunity to speak life into someone. So parents to children, siblings to their brothers and sisters, teachers to students, coaches to athletes, business owners to employees, or it could be something as unintentional as you and I are standing in the grocery line. I don't know you from Adam, except I know Adam was a bit older. But the point being is I can have a choice right there. Do I say something, or let's just think about this. Do I even acknowledge you? How many people are indifferent to someone standing in line with this? In fact, they could strike up a conversation and they could pour some encouragement into somebody they don't even know. So I think to answer your question, Andy, my book is designed that it's like a one size fits all type thing. And I don't mean that to be generic, but I think it has a purpose for fundamental communication related to the choice. Do I speak? Do I speak positively? Do I speak negatively? Whatever you do, you're going to get a result, positive or negative.
Your career and life experience are noteworthy. And we could go through and spend 15 minutes just talking about everything that you've done and the experiences that you've had throughout your life. Founding Life Christian Academy, a school that we at SB Live Washington cover, terrific athletic programs across the board. I'm wondering, what was the story of how you came to realize your desire to write this book? Walk us through that process. Was it something you always wanted to do, or was there a moment where a light bulb flickered?
My first experience was in 1977, and I had been a high school coach for 3 years, had an opportunity to go to North Dakota State University under Jim Wacker's leadership as a graduate assistant in the football program. Well, in my first 3 years of high school coaching at Powers Lake, North Dakota, small school, small town, great experience. Some of my best friends this day still live in that community. Point being is, when I was a young coach, I was trying to buy every book I could find about how to coach football, how to motivate people, how to be successful, how to be a leader. But when I got to North Dakota State in 1977, Jim Wacker asked me in the summer before the season ever started, in about 6 weeks, he said, Ross, as a summer assignment, I'd like to have you create a notebook on motivation for our coaching staff. So I spent the better part of 6 weeks doing and compiling that notebook. That wasn't something that I spent too much time writing. Instead, I was collecting. These were in the days, Andy, where we used typewriters and we used mimeograph machines. And I remember how great I felt about August 10th that fall when we started fall camp. And I was able to give each coach on the staff one of those notebooks. So that was my first experience with really doing a deep dive into one subject, motivation. And most of what went in that notebook, obviously, was positive. There wasn't a lot of point in putting negative motivation in that notebook, because that's not the desired result. So that was my first experience. Then in 2015, I had cancer, had surgeries, had a couple of weeks to recover. And during that two-week recovery time at home, I was there with my wife, Ronnie, but I had quite a bit of quiet time. And I started to think in terms of the context of, well, with cancer, you don't know for sure what the outcomes are going to be. but what more would I want to accomplish in an undefined look forward, i.e. at the amount of time I might have left, a year, 5 years, 10 years. One of the 11 goals I came up with was to write a book. And you spoke to my life experience. I've been blessed with significant number of opportunities. And I felt like I had the wherewithal to draw on those opportunities, recall those people that poured into my life. And the reasons I was where I was in 2015, not the cancer issue, but how good God had been to me over the course of my lifetime. So that rekindled that idea of let me do some writing on a focused subject. I lost your video.
You bring up battling cancer, and I should say now that you know you're in this November, 5 years removed from your final surgery on your kidney. You're cancer-free.
Yes.
Walk us through this. This may not directly be related to the book, but it's just it's an amazing story at how you caught that so early, that you know you had a tumor on your arm, and how that actually may have saved your life.
Well, actually, my wife should get credit for that, because it appeared to be a mole on my arm, and the mole did not go away, and it got a little bit larger, and it protruded to the point where it was a nuisance. And I stepped out of the shower one day, and that mole was bleeding lightly. And I showed it to her, and she said, you know, when we get back home, we were in North Dakota at the time, seeing my mom. She said, we need to go get that checked out. So I did. And when I went to a dermatologist, the dermatologist said, I'm just going to scrape this off. I don't think there's anything to do it. 4 days later, I get a call at my office saying, I need to go to a surgeon, because in fact, it was a melanoma. And melanoma obviously is an outgrowth in your skin that's cancerous. So I went and did that. And then I had to go back again about a month later and have some more taken out. But the beauty of it was, the blessing was, when you have a melanoma, doctors are intense about getting your entire body checked. So I had to have several body scans, all my internal organs, all my skin. And in that, Andy, showed up a tumor in my kidney, and that obviously had to come out. The amazing thing about it was that it was unrelated to melanoma. So in November of 2015 is when I actually had the largest surgery done. And so here we are, we're in October 2020. I'm within a month, so to speak, of cancer-free 5 years.
That's amazing, truly. I appreciate you sharing that with us, and that's a landmark sure. That should continually be celebrated. One of the pillars of the book.
Yeah, no kidding.
One of the pillars of the book is to overwhelm negative messaging with positivity. In coaching, one of the balances that every coach has to strike is how to not only just be positive, but be honest. Not necessarily overwhelmingly negative, but honesty is so key. How do you strike that balance in your coaching career, knowing how to be brutally honest and not, you know, in an overwhelmingly negative way?
Well, I think here again, there's a parallel between coaching and family leadership and business leadership, regardless of what size and what age. And the parallel that connects them all, so to speak, is leaders need to be sensitive as to pouring more in than they're taking out. Teams and organizations and families grow and gain energy because you keep putting fuel in the tank as compared to if you're drawing out, not unlike your checkbook. You feel better when you're depositing than when you look at a negative balance, true? So in this regard, when I set out to do this, my sense was that coaches had tremendous impact on people. I knew that from my own experience, and I knew it from the feedback I'd gotten from athletes for decades, 35 years of being a football coach. I got it from employees that worked for me at Life Christian Academy. I got it from citizens in Tacoma when I was elected official for 8 years. Because what you give is what you get. And if you give encouragement in the context of helping people feel better about themselves, that's the kind of person that people want to be around. And I think as a coach, it's crucial that coaches keep the pulse, so to speak. And I put my hand on my wrist right now. Coaches have to keep a pulse on the heartbeat of their teams. And teams that are encouraged frequently have a fast heartbeat. Their heart beats strong. They can't wait to compete because they know they're ready. They're energized for the opportunity. On the flip side, bosses that drive their people too hard are too negative, too many times saying, well, next time you do this. What is that connotation right away? When you hear next time, how does that make you feel about, oh, what's he or she referring to? Must not have been good enough the first time. You see, you're withholding the blessing as compared to someone saying, the same person saying, well, when we look forward to doing this again, we might consider, you see, it's a whole different approach to it. We might consider, and you empower the person you're speaking to consider changing. You're not next timing or, oh, you did that wrong again. So I just think it's important that coaches monitor the pulse of their people. Parents, I've told this story for years, put my two boys to bed. Never once when I put them to bed did I scold them before they were falling asleep. Never once did I put them to bed and say, you know, I hope you have a good day tomorrow. I never once put them to bed and said, you know, I hope things work out for you. And I wanted to give the blessing to my two boys every night when I was there to put them to bed. And that was simply by saying things like, you know what, Brandon, you're going to be a great man someday. Tyler, I am so proud of you. I can't wait to see you do that. Play next week. I can't wait to see what kind of father you're going to be. What am I doing? I'm being intentional about speaking to the two young people that grew up in my house every day, you see? So the choice of words is so important.
One of the things you get back to continually is, you know, how close leadership is tied to personal accountability. It's clear when you say, when you talk about, you know, how you structure certain advice that you hold a high duty of care for the words you use. But accountability isn't just, you know, accepting when you know you're wrong, but also, hey, it's kind of analyzing intent versus impact. I might have said something that I meant something that was not necessarily received in that way. And how important is removing ego and just kind of understanding that, you know, it's not about you. It's not about your intent. It can more so, improvement can be about impact.
Yes. And when I started to build the framework for the book, I surveyed coaches and leaders around the country to get their favorite sayings and expressions they used. And I ended up with about 750 of those sayings and expressions. So I knew I had enough. And then I simply divided them up into what topic did they fit into. And some of those sayings pertain to faith. Some pertain to teamwork. Some pertain to leadership. Some pertain to discipline. And those categories became the chapters of the book. But to get to your question, the title of a chapter I didn't think I was ever going to write, but it became obvious based upon conversations and more of these things, was about relationship. So to your point of knowing what to say, who to say it to, and then sometimes you have to, as you say, you know, I made a mistake there. I should have said, I meant to say, and so on. Well, I believe that really is a function of the relationship. The deeper the relationship, the more you better understand, and I understand, the influence and the impact I have on people. And you're the same. So I think really Communication is a function of relationship. Smiles are a great way to influence relationship. When you and I meet in the hallway, or you and I meet in public, or you and I meet in my office, if I start the conversation with a smile and a handshake, I've already extended warmth and opportunity to grow the conversation. If you walk in and I don't even acknowledge you, I keep doing what I'm doing at my desk, that sends an entirely different message. You interpret that as, you know what, he must be busy. This might not be a good time. And so right there, I've restricted conversation as compared to open the opportunities. Let me touch on one more thing. Part of it too, in terms of the power of words goes both ways. At times, I'm the speaker. And if you read the book, you would think, well, yes, I'm the speaker most of the time. However, words are received, whether they are verbally spoken to me, over the phone, or if they are sent to me in a handwritten note or a letter. Either way, words are spoken and they're received. And much of relationship and much of influence is, how am I receiving what's being said to me? That can build me up. For example, if I had a tough couple of days and my wife walks in and says the wrong, what does that do? That continues the downward trend, right? But my wife doesn't do that. My wife comes in and said, hey, how you doing? You're doing great. You're going to overcome this. We're going to get through this. Well, what's she? She's the cheerleader. So, but there again, that's her choice. What she says to me affirms, lifts me up, puts wind in my wings, and here we go.
You grew up working on a farm in rural North Dakota.
Yep.
Wound up coaching, like you said, in North Dakota State. But describe your upbringing and how that has shaped your adult life.
I write a little bit about it in the chapter on discipline and training, in those two chapters. First of all, my dad was a successful farmer. He had his challenges. He was an alcoholic, but he overcame it late in his life. But growing up on a farm in the Midwest, 1950s, 60s, hard work. So I gained and appreciated the value of hard work. To this day, I'm thankful for that upbringing. Secondly, my mother was a very disciplined person. So I learned discipline from her. I knew when I walked in and out of that house, you know, exactly what expectations were. So I learned how to meet expectations. And I also learned what happened if I didn't meet those expectations. So I look back on it. And then the other thing is, even as busy as we were on the farm, my parents made sure I had opportunities for growth. So they got me engaged in activities in my small town. I mean, I had 31 in my high school graduating class. We're talking rural America, Andy. But that foundation that I was given, including a faith foundation, helped me. And I think it increased my confidence level because I felt worthy. My parents had spoken enough good into me. I felt worthy of opportunity.
Something that you carried through, not only as an administrator, but as a football coach for so many years at Life Christian Academy. Your book published October 2nd officially. Have you heard from any of your former players or anyone that you've coached that may have surprised you since the book published?
Yes, quite a few, honestly. It's been, that's been one of the real fun parts of it, has been reaching back to these people to do the interviews and to have the conversation, to write the book, but then now to get their responses. So in the last 10 days, people are reposting pictures of my book on social media saying, hey, just got my copy. I got a text this morning from a former Life Christian Academy athlete saying, hey, I just got my copy. Can't wait to read it. Been listening to all your podcasts. So you get that kind of feedback. I got feedback yesterday from a young man who played for me in 1974. That's a long time ago.
Wow.
And he said, Ross, I just got my copy, ready to dive in to see if you're still the same guy. I mean, so anyway, yeah, there's been lots of that. It's been fun.
That's great to hear. I should say that, you know, the book just published a couple of weeks ago, but as a precursor to the publication, you have started, you started a podcast at the beginning of the year, which at this point feels like that was 15 years ago, but you, you can go yeah. back and chart through 24 episodes, essentially setting the tone for what to expect in this, in the book. So Ross, I really appreciate you joining our podcast today. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Where can listeners to this podcast find your book?
There's a website, www.coachspeakslife.com. And that website is all about the book. The book's available via hardcover, softcover, ebook in about 3 weeks. It'll also be available in audio version. Or people can get it at Amazon. They can get it on Barnes & Noble. So it's available in a variety of choices, a variety of methods of delivery, so to speak. But again, www.coachspeakslife. In fact, on that website, there's an excerpt from the book that's written as a sample, so to speak. Before we go, I do need to give credit to all the coaches in the country that responded by giving me their sayings, because those sayings are really fun to listen to. My wife finished the book last week, and she said, it is interesting reading all these sayings. She's been a coach's wife most of her life, but she said, some of these sayings I can relate to as a mom, as a wife, and she was a nurse, as a coworker to people. But some of them, she said, have caught me completely off guard. I'm not sure exactly what they mean. But the point is, the coaches around the country, NFL coaches, college guys, high school, youth league coaches, they gave me their expressions that their team would remember. And those sayings are spread out over the course of all 11 chapters. So I'm indebted to those coaches.
Some of the names of those coaches, I would imagine, you know, listeners to this podcast who care about high school sports across the state of Washington will be especially resonant. Bob Lucy, who Curtis High School named its football field after last year, a legendary coach, is
yes
among them. And so you'll have to check out the book to see all of the others from whom you pull knowledge, messaging, and information. So Ross Jelseth, I really appreciate your time with us on the podcast today. You're the author of the book, Winning Ways. You can find that, like you said, at the aforementioned website. So for SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, I've been Andy Bueller. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week. This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. You can find our work at scorebooklive.com/Washington. As always, a big thanks to our sponsor, Washington Federal. And thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. The song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away. Written by Carl Johnson, James Schroeder, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. Talk to you next week.